We're holding in Nedarim on page Nuntes, a few lines into Os Yudches. We're actually holding we're holding Omer of Yitzchak, although I think actually when we ended off yesterday, I think I skipped about half a line at the end. Vamri. So let's we'll do that. We were talking about there's a pasuk in Nehemiah, which originally was part of Ezra, describing how Ezra is reading the Torah on Rosh Hashanah to the Jews who had come back from Babel to in the time of the in the early second Beis Hamikdash, and the pasuk says that they read from the Sefer Besodas Elikim, from the Torah of Hashem, Mefodash, explained Vesoim Sechel, and giving the understanding Vayavinu Bamikra, and they helped them understand the Psukim. So the Gemara explains that means that he read the actual words. There was the Targum, the Levium were giving the Targum in Aramaic. They had the divisions of Psukim, which help us understand how what the words mean. When Vayavinu Bamikra, we said Elo Pisuk Taimim refers to the division of sentences using the within the sentences using the Tura, where the Tura also break up the sentence into clauses that help us understand it. But Amrila, and then there was another understanding is that Vayavinu Bamikra refers to the Masoretus, the details of the Masoretus, for example, words that are Mole and Choser, and how they're pronounced, and the proper pronunciation, Dogish and Rafa, all that sort of thing is included in Masoretus. So now the Gemara brings in this connection, Amar of Yitzchak, Mikra Sofer. There are various details in Psukim that are also very important. Mikra Sofrim, the way that the Sofrim, which means the Chachamim, taught us to read to read the words of Tanakh. So it includes again those kinds of details of Nekudas and proper pronunciation and all that. It also includes Bechlal, the proper pronunciation of Lashon Kodesh according to the rules, the Itur Sofrim, and also Itur Sofrim. Itur means crowning. So the Ran explains it means, as the Gemara is going to give some examples, Psukim, where you have words that are not really necessary for the actual meaning of the pasuk would work just as well without those words, but they're put in for stylistic reasons. Because just like Lahavdil, a regular writer writes and he wants it to come out nice, so sometimes he uses particular turns of phrase just so for it to sound nice. So Hashem wanted to do the same thing in the Torah as well, and therefore we have examples of that, and it's going to bring examples from Chumash and from Tehillim. So those kinds of things. The Rosh has a different explanation, actually. The Rosh explains that Itur is related to an Aramaic word that means to remove. So he explains it means you have words with letter as in the examples that the Gemara is going to give us, where there are letters removed. There are letters that on the face of it should have been there, but they're not. And nevertheless, we understand the pasuk as though they were written there. The kalyan v'lek kalyan. Then you also have words in you have words that are read even though they're not written, and written even though they're not read. Now you have kriyuk ksiv that we're familiar with. That's included in this as well. But the Gemara is mainly going to focus on. And Bechlau, Kriyu Ksiv, we have the Alter Rebbe mentions in Igeres Yud Tes of Tanya. He explains in more detail in the Likutei Torah and Parshas Shmini, and it's explained in a few other places in Chassidus that the idea is that with a Kriyu Ksiv, the way we have it written in front of us, the Ksiv, it comes from a higher world, and therefore it's not always understandable with our Seichel, and the Kri is the way it is in our world, which is meant to be more understood with our Seichel. So anyway, but here the Gemara is focusing on sometimes you have, and it's going to give examples. You have words in you have words where a word is written in the sefer, but we don't say that word when we're reading the pasuk. We skip over it, and vice versa. So that would be kalyan v'lek sivan is the other way around. Sometimes we have a word that's not written, and we have to supply it bal peh. The Gemara is going to give examples of both of these things. So all of those kinds of things, halacha l'Moshe miSinai, all of those are halacha l'Moshe miSinai, meaning you shouldn't just, Moshe received from Sinai and told the Jewish people that this is how it's supposed to be. The point is, in other words, you shouldn't just think, now, b'chlal, a lot of these kinds of things that the Gemara is talking about over here, like these kaviyan v'lek sivan and vice versa, or in general, kriyuk sivs, you have quite a number of rishonim, actually, who take the view that they're, for example, the Radak writes that when they came at the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, they had to gather together whatever scattered Sfarim of Nach they could find and compare them. And sometimes they found discrepancies between one and the other. And he attributes the Kriyuk Sivs to that. The Abba Abanel, in his introduction to Yirmiyah, explains you have a lot more kriyot ksivs than average in Sefer Yirmiyah, and he attributes it to the fact that Yirmiyah was young when he started his nevuah. He says on himself, Nar Anochi, and therefore he partially didn't know how to spell properly. It's the Abba Abanel. I mean, he's not, there's no katla kanya ba'agma, but still, the Gemara is saying over here nothing of the sort. It's halacha l'moshe mi'Sinai, it has to be that way. But they ask, what does it mean, halacha l'moshe mi'Sinai? We're talking about things in books of Nach. So one explanation is it means that the Eibishter told Moshe that there is such a thing that sometimes where you have things like that, and the Chachmei HaDoros, when they write down their individual Sfarim, when the Nevi'im write down their individual Sfarim, then they'll decide based on the Nevuah, based on the Ruach HaKodesh that they have, where these particular kinds of things should be done in actuality. The Chida actually has a different take on it. He says that the actual words of Nevi'im and Ksuvim were given to Moshe Rabbeinu as well. So even though we usually think of, this Sefer was written by Shmuel, that Sefer was written by David, that Sefer was written by Shlomo, etc. But the Chidah learns that the actual wording of it was originally given to Moshe, and then it was just each Navi, each king, or whatever, wrote it down in his time according to that. Similar to the idea that Kol Masha Talmud Vosek Osek L'Chadish was told to Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a lot of discussion b'chlal when we talk about that the Eibishter gave Moshe the whole Torah. What does it mean exactly? Did he give him every detail as we have it written down for us, or does it mean that he gave him the Klolim and from that is deduced all of the everything that makes up the Mishnah and the Gemara and then so on and so forth. In any case, so that's one meaning of that. So again, one meaning of Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai is over here that it means that Hashem gave Moshe the concept. There is going to be such thing. There are going to be such things in Psukim, and it's up to each individual Navi to figure out on his own based on his Nevuah where to put it. Or it means that Hashem Taka dictated the words to Moshe and along with these Karyan V'Lek Sivan and all of that. Another possibility is sometimes we find the word Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai is used not strictly of something that Hashem actually told Moshe, but something that's unimpeachably true. Sometimes the Gemara even uses the expression Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai about something that's clearly Derabbanan. So it means, in other words, something that there's no question it's true and nobody is choylik on it. So here, the point is, nobody is choylik on the concept that these things exist and that this is how the books of Tanakh have to be written. As far as those things, by the way, as far as, like I said, where the Radak and the Abba Abanel attribute the kriyuk sivs and things like that to mistakes and things like that, the Maharal talks about it and explains based on this Gemara that it can't be so, and he explains about the kriyuk sivs, for example, in similar to what it brings later on in Tanya about higher and lower ways of understanding it. And the Malbim also in his Pirush in his introduction to his Pirush on Yirmiyahu also takes very strong issue with the Abba Abanel and says absolutely not. If you find more kriyuk sivs in Yirmiyah, it means that Yirmiyah much more than other Sfarim is meant to be understood on two different levels. Anyway. So what are examples of all these things? Mikra Sofrim, what do we mean by examples of Mikra Sofrim, where the Chachamim taught us the proper pronunciation of the words? For example, Eretz Oretz. For example, you have a word like Eretz, which sometimes is with two segals, and sometimes on a snachter or a sof posik, or once in a while on some other separating terup, instead it's pronounced Oretz. Now, they didn't have the Nekudis written over there then, it was all Baal Peh. So the Sofrim, the Chachamim, taught us that this is the way it is. Another examples, Shamayim and Mitzrayim. Now here you have a few different explanations. What's special about those words? The Ran explains that they on the face of it there should be an aleph in the middle of them. You have the word Shamayim, there should be an aleph over there, and the same thing Mitzrayim. We actually find Rashi mentions in a couple of places in Shas such a thing that we would expect in certain places where there are kametzes or patachs, they should use an aleph. In Yiddish, that's the standard way of writing. We find also in Kisvei HaGaonim, we find in the times of the Gaonim, it became very common to do that. Many times they would write word. They didn't commonly write the Nekudis yet, but even though the Nekudis had already been reduced to writing by the Balei HaMasorah, but we still find many times where they would write words that have a kometz or a patach in the middle of them, they would write them with an aleph in the middle. You find, for example, in Igeres of Shur Goin, for example, he writes the word rova, resh aleph, vez aleph, and other examples like that. So here the point is, we don't have the aleph written in the word shamayim and mitzrayim, and without it, we would know. We would think the word is pronounced shamim or mitzrim, and therefore, so mikra sofrim tells us not so. That's one explanation. Tosfos gives another explanation. It's also similar to Eretz and Oretz. You have sometimes it's Shamayim and sometimes it's Shamoyim. Sometimes it's Mitzrayim and sometimes it's Mitzroyim. So the same kind of thing that you have where the pronunciation changes on its, depending on its position in the pasuk. So that kind of thing is included. All of that kind of thing is included in Mikra Sofrim.
Doesn't change the touch of the word.
Doesn't change the touch of the word, but nevertheless, you still have to read it that way.
Something in Korea, someone says S instead of Ace, and what screams out Ace.
Right.
But
it's not ma'akiv. It's true, but nevertheless, we're saying there's still halacha l'moshe m'sinai. There's still important components of the reading of the Torah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the chatzila. Yeah, even as far as tshurup, by the way, it brings in shulchan aruch. I mean, the tshurup are not really ma'akiv at all. Nevertheless, if a bal koreh is not reading with the proper tshurup, then they're supposed to tell him. They're supposed to correct him. And yeah. Okay. So those are examples of Mikra Sofrim. Next, Itur Sofrim. What do we mean by the Itur of Sofrim? Again, meaning either the decoration, either the decorative stylistic words or the words with missing letters. So for example, you have the expression, Avraham says to the Malachim, Achar Ta'avoru. He says, I'll give you some bread, ve'ekha paslechem, v'sadu libchem, Achar Ta'avoru. Now, it could have just said, v'savoru, and you'll leave. The achar is we're not darshaning anything from it or anything like that. It's just there as a nicer stylistic way of flourish in the text. Similarly, achar telchu or for achar telach. Another example is in Parshas in Chayesara, where Rivka's mother and brother say, let her stay with us yomi may also, let her stay with us for a year, or at least for 10 months, achar telach, and after that she'll go. So again, it could have said, viselach. So again, the achar over there is just as a nice flourish. A third example, also from Chumash, achar teyosef. You have that Miriam is going to have tzaras and be outside of the machna for 7 days, and after that she'll be gathered in. So with all of these, so again, the Ran points out in all of these cases, it didn't have to say achar, it could just said a vav, and it would mean the same thing. There are several other explanations. Again, the Rosh, who holds that itur sofrim means that they're missing letters, he says that in each of these cases, you would expect there to be a vav. You would expect there to be a v'sadu libchem ve'achar ta'avodu. She should stay with us a year or 10 days. Ve'achar telach. So the fact that it's missing the vav, but we still understand it as though it had that. That would be another meaning of itur sofrim. The Meforish, printed under Rashi's name, gives a different point as well. Actually, for these three that we said so far, is pretty much the same thing. That it could have just said a vav, but the next one is a more elaborate example. Kidmush, this is from Tilim. Kidmush shorim achar noigmim. The pasuk says the singers came first and then the musicians. Kidmush shorim achar, and after them noignim came the people playing the instruments. Talking about Kriyas Yamsuf. As we have, first the men sang and then the women came with their trupim of mecholos. So the point is, in other words, that again, it could have just said kidmush shorim v'noignim. Says the Ran, it could have said that. The Meforish says instead, it could have said the other way around. It could have said kidmu noignim vishorim. Because after all, if the point is that the word kidmu, after all, has a double meaning, it can mean they went ahead, or it can mean. Kidmu shorim achar noignim. In other words, we can understand it to mean that the singers came ahead achar noignim after the musicians. Or it could be you could equally well understand it. Kidmu shorim, the singers came first achar, and after them noignim came the musicians. So the pasuk could have phrased it differently. It could have said shorim v'noignim or something like that, and it would have meant the same thing. It still would have meant that the singers came first and then the musicians. So we're not saying that the achar is the only example. No, because the Gemara is going to give another example now. But so far we have all the examples involve the word achar, right? Where after all, achar means after, and it could equally well vav would accomplish the same thing. So all those are examples. Another example. Another example is tzidkos chokahare keil mishpotecha tohoim rabba, also from Tehillim. Your tzedakah is like the mighty mountains, and your mishpotim, your judgments, are like the great deep. So what does that mean? So here the Ran gives, the first explanation the Ran gives is, it could have said tzidkos chokahare keil without the chof. Your tzedakah is that it is needed even for the mighty mountains, namely the malachim. So what's the chaf doing over there? It's also a tiferes haloshen to make it sound nicer. Then the Ran brings a second explanation, that the itur sofrim in all these cases is that we put the trup in order to make the syntax of the sentence go correctly. Meaning, in other words, like this. For example, with all the achars that we said before, achar tavodu, achar telach, and the rest of them, we have a separating trup, a tipcha, typically on the word achar in each of these cases to make it clear. It means achar, afterwards, will be whatever it's going to be. You will pass, so you will go by, or she will leave, or whatever. Without that, if we had the word achar with a connecting trup, then we would misunderstand it, and we would think it means that after she goes, or after you go, or whatever. And by tzidkos chokahare keil would be the same kind of thing. The Ran says that that his Rebbe explains the word kaharare has a separating trup. Therefore, it tells us to read the pasuk not kaharare keil like the mighty mountains, but rather tzidkos chokahare. Your tzedakah is like the mountains. And who are we speaking to? Keil Hashem. Now, mind you, actually, in our Tillims, Minchas Shai on that pasuk in Tillim points out that our Tillims not only don't have a separating trup on the word kaharare, they actually have it connected to the word keo with a makaf, which means that they share the same trup. So exactly the opposite of what the Ran's Rebbe is saying over here. But in any case, the point is, the Ran says, according to that explanation, that it's called itur sofrim because the words are decorated and with these trup that help us understand the meaning of the sentence correctly. According to the Mefarish, the vort is the pasuk could have switched around the things. It could have said kaharei keil tzidkasecha, like tohoim rabba mishpatecha, or something like that. And instead, the style that it is like this is to make it sound nicer, to sing better. So all these kinds of things are examples of itur sofrim. So again, we shouldn't just think that it's just random like that. We shouldn't just think that we could change it depending on how we find that doesn't seem to fit. No, it's all halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, and that's the way it is. Next, Kalyan v'loik sivan. What are some examples of words that are read in a pasuk but not written? So we have as follows. Keep in mind, in the time of the Gemara, they didn't have divisions of Prokim yet. Those were made well over 1,000 years later by a Galach, and eventually they became accepted by Jews as well. So the Gemara can't very well tell us, look in this Perek and this Pasuk. So instead, it needs to tell us the word and the context that it's in. So the first one is Prost Belechtei. This is from Sefer Shmuel. You have a Pasuk over there describing how David and his army went to fight against Hadad Ezer Melech Tzoiva, where the Pasuk says he was going to extend his power to Nahar Prost. Belechtei Lahoshav Yodin, the Nahar Prost. The word Prost is not written over there, but we read it. In present day printed Tanakhs, each publisher has their own way of representing that. They might put just the nekudas in the body of the text and put the word in a footnote and put the actual word in a footnote below. They might put the word in square brackets. They might do different kinds of things, but they might leave a blank space and put the word on the side. But whatever, always it's meant to represent in a handwritten scroll of Sefer Shmuel. You would have the pasuk would not have the word pros written over there, and we would read it baal peh. The Gemara doesn't explain why in each of these cases it does that. There are some places where there are explanations of what the significance of that is. Incidentally, by the way, we're talking about Hadad Ezra Melech Tzoiva, the Jews of Syria. Had a Masoda that Aleppo, the city of Aleppo in northern Syria, is identical with Aram Tzoiva, and there was actually a shul over there that was called Yoav's shul, and they had Beit Knesset Yoav, whatever they called it, and they had a Masoda that it was actually first founded by Yoav, David's general. So that's the first one. So again, the word pros is missing in the written text, but we read it baal peh. This is part of halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. Another example, Ish Dekasha Yishal. Later on, in Sefer Shmuel, it describes how Achitofel was always the best advisor there was, and asking his advice is like asking the Urim Betrumim Kasha Yishal Ish B'dvar Elokim. The word Ish is missing in the written pasuk, and we have to supply it Baal Peh. The next example, Boyim Divinivnasa, Pasuk in Yumia, Hine Yomim Boyim, the Navi says, behold, days are coming when Yerushalayim will be rebuilt much bigger than it was before. The word Boyim is missing in the written in the written Pasuk, and we have to read it Baal Peh.
All of those words, let's say, if they appear in Machter, are they?
We would read them. We would read them the same way as a
probably show in the
how each publisher would do. It would have to be it would be up to them. But for example, the Gemara is going to give some examples. So far none of these appear in Haftarah. But for example, in places where they have the minhag to read, there are kehilas where they have the minhag to read the Haftarah from a klaf, or for that matter, to read the Chumash Megillus. They also have, in some kehilas, they have a minhag to read from a klaf. The Gemara is going to give a couple of examples of this kind of thing from Megillus Rus, for example. So in kehilas where they read Megillus Rus from a klaf, then the Baal Koda has to be aware of these things. There's two places in Rus where we have a word that has to be supplied Baal Peh, and the flip side, there's one place where there's a word that's written there, but he doesn't say it. What? I mean, they're making a bracha. Did they make a bracha on the Mikra Megillah? I don't think so, since it's only a minhag, but I'm not sure about that. Okay. The next example, boyim divinivnasa. The pasuk says vinivnasa ir lashem, and hine yomim boyim, and the word boyim is missing. The next one is also from Yirmiyah, Loch Depleta. You have towards the end of Sefer Yirmiyah, he has a couple of long nevuahs about the downfall and destruction of Bavel, and he has an expression in the pasuk over there, al yehi loch. Plato. There should not be any remnant above her. The word law is missing. The next one is Ace de Hugad Hugad. The next one is, you have, this one is from Megillas Rus. So Boyaz, Rus asks Boyaz, how come it is you're showing me so much kindness and favor? I come from Moyav and all that. And Boyaz says, it was told to me what you did for your mother-in-law, how you loyally followed her to back to Eretz Yisrael. So he has the wording he uses, Hugad Hugadli Ace Kolasher Sises Chamoisech. So the word Ace is not written in the pasuk, but it's read. Now, the Ran points out that in our Sfarim, in our Sfarim, we have something different than that. We do in fact have the word ace in the Pasuk, both as kriyuksiv. It is in fact written, and it is actually pronounced as well, unlike what the Gemara is saying over here. And actually our Tanakhs are different than that as well. Our Tanakhs don't have the word s, neither as kri nor ksiv. It turns out that there are different mesoras in different places in Tanakh about certain details. And in particular, we find among the Balei HaMesorah in the times of the Amoroyim and Rabban and Sevaroyim and Gaonim, there were two major groups of Balei HaMesorah. They were called Ma'arvoi and Madinchoi. Ma'arvoi meaning the Westerners from Eretz Yisrael, and Madinchoi meaning the Easterners from Bavel. They had arguments between them on various details of Masorah. They even had different styles of, once they started writing down the Nekudas, they had different ways of doing them. The Bavliim came up with a different system of writing the Nekudas, mostly above the letters, as opposed to the Bnei Eretz Yisrael did them below. Eventually, Bnei Eretz Yisrael, the Ma'arvoi, won out in most cases. Almost always, our Masorah is based on the Ma'arvoi. But here, the Gemara was written in Bavel, so very, very possibly it's following the Madinchoi. There's a Rabbi Akiva Eger, there's a Gilyon HaShas in Shabbos, where he lists a couple of dozen examples from Gemaras and Rashis and Medrashim that have, where we see that the Masorah, as Chazal tell us, is different than the Masorah that we have in our Sfarim of Tanakh. Nevertheless, in the end, when it comes to the actual practicalities of writing and reading it, we follow the Masorah even when it goes against the Gemara, like it does here. Okay, so that was another example. Another one is Eli de Hagoren. A few psukim later, Nomi is telling Ruth to go and dress up and go to the granary and stay there overnight and meet up with Boaz and tell him that he has to be the goyo. So Ruth says, "Koila shatomri Eli ase." She says, "Whatever you tell me, I will do." But the word Eli is left out in the pasuk. It is left out in the writing, and we have to supply it Baal Peh. Here you have a couple of different explanations in Midrashim and in Mefarshim what the significance of that missing word Eli is. It means, among other things, it means that Ruth says, you know, I don't really fully understand what it is that you're telling me, Naomi. This seems like a very brazen and unsneistic thing to do, but I'll do it anyway. So therefore, like the word Eli is supplied Baal Peh, as if like whatever you're telling to me, Eli, but even though I don't understand it. And all of the medrash that explains it means that she's saying to herself, Olai, it's up to me to figure out how to make it make sense, but I'm going to do it regardless. Anyway, so that's another one. And in a few psukim later, Eli dehasa odim. A few psukim later, Boaz gives after that night, Boaz gives her sheish sa'odim, six barley, which on the face of it means six measures of barley. Although the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that he actually gave her six stalks of barley, symbolizing that he and she together, once they get married, they're going to have six descendants who each have six milas. David and Mashiach and Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. The Gemara works it out over there. Anyway, so. So now when she comes home with the food, then Naomi asks her, so what happened? And then Ruth tells her that he gave Shesha Sa'udim Ha'ela Nosan Eli. Because he said to me, don't go empty-handed to your mother-in-law. So again, the word Eli is missing in the written text, and we read it Baal Peh. So holen kaiyan v'leik sivan. So all of these are words that are read but not written. There are actually a few others as well. The notes of the Masoda in various places in Tanakh and Minchas Shai and other Sfarim that deal with Masoda point out there are a couple of other examples. The Gemara's list over here is not necessarily meant to be every such example. All of these we notice are in Nevi'im and Ksuvim. None of them are in Chumash. Then we have the other way around, Ksivan v'lekarian. Then you have words that are written but not read. We skip over them when we're reading. So here are some examples. Here, this next one actually is from Haftorah. No di yislach. You have the story of Naaman over there. It's in the Haftorah of Tazria, where he had saras, and he goes to Elisha, and Elisha tells him to dip seven times in the Yarden. At the end of it, Naaman says, I'm going to become a ger toshev. I'm giving up avodah zarah. However, he says, there's one thing I need to ask, that when I'm going with the king of Aram to the temple of avodah zarah, to Beis Rimon, he's going to be bowing down over there, and because I'm with him, I'm going to have to bow down as well, and then put on an appearance as though I'm worshiping the getchka with him. So he says, Yislach Hashem la'avdecha b'davar hazeh. The actual written text is Yislach na Hashem la'avdecha b'davar hazeh. But we skip over the word na and we don't read it. So again, what they do in books of Haftorah, every publisher decides for themselves how they want to do it. But that word na is written, but it's not pronounced. The next example, Zois da mitzvah. The word zois in connection where the pasuk says v'zois hamitzvah. Now you have that expression a few times in Parshas Vaschanan, and Rashi actually explains, or the Pirush printed under Rashi's name says that that's what it means. Which in that case, that would be the only example of all these things that is in Chumash. However, the Ran says we don't find that in our Sifrei Torah. There's a footnote over here that says that brings from Minchas Shai on a pasuk in Yirmiyah that it's actually supposed to be not the word zois with a zion, but rather v'es. You have a pasuk in Yirmiyah you're describing. This is also an Haftorah. It's an Haftorah Bahar, where you have Hashem tells Yirmiyah, your cousin Hanamel is going to come and ask you to buy a field that used to belong to him, and he had to sell it, and you being his goyel, you should buy it back in order to keep it in the family. And Yirmiyah describes over there how he took the whole document, as a chosim, as a mitzvah, as a goloi, and he gives it to Baruch Ben Neriah to put away to keep for long term. So there you have the word ve'es over there. So you have this word is written is written, but it's not read. There also we don't have our Tanakhs don't have it. They don't have that kind of thing.
So according to that,
it's not in the Torah, but rather in Nevi'im, right? The next one, Yidrech Dehadorech, in the Nevuos of Yirmiyah about the downfall of Bavel, he has a pasuk over there, El Yidrech Hadorech Kashtai. I'm speaking to those who are going to step on their bows to get ready to shoot arrows at Bavel. And you have the word Yidrech is repeated twice in the pasuk over there, and we skip over one of them. The next one, in Yechezkel, Chamesh to Pas Negev, at the end of Sefer Yechezkel, he describes the future city of Yerushalayim, and he describes the dimensions of it, 4,500 kanim on each side, and he gives the numbers of their Chamesh Meres V'Abas Alofim on each side, and by one of the sides, by the south side over there, it has the word Chamesh repeated twice. So we read one of them and we skip the other one. The next one is Im D'Ki Goyel. The next one is back in Sefer Rus, where again, Rus is asking Boaz, you need to be my goyel, you need to buy back the fields that were in our family, and you need to marry me as part of the deal. And Boaz tells her, you know, there is a goyel who's closer than me, because I'm a second degree relative to your husband, Machlon, and you have a first degree relative. The Gemara explains that the Gemara explains that Boaz's father and Elimelech were brothers, which makes Boaz a cousin of Machlon. And meanwhile, you have another brother, Toiv, who was the goyel, who he goes to in Perek Dalet over there. And gives him the offer, and he's Machlon's uncle, which is closer than a cousin. So Boaz says the expression over there, Va'ata ki omnam, he says indeed, ki im goyel anoichi. But the word im is not read when we read the pasuk. So, for example, when we say it in Tikkun Leil Shavuos, we skip the word im, and again, when those who read Sefer Rus publicly also skip that word. Here you have an explanation, I think, from the Maharal that says the idea is because at the time, Boaz is taken not sure whether there's a closer relative, whether he should be doing this. But in the end, it turns out that closer relative decided he didn't want to and then left the field open to Boaz. So therefore, we don't pronounce the word im, because in fact, it's not an im, it's a certainty that Boaz ends up doing it. So Holin, Ksivan, Velekari, and all of these are examples where a word is written but not read. Here also, there are a couple of other examples in our Tanakhs where also we have each time a word im that's written in a pasuk and then not read.
Okay, that's one question from Helen. And the pasuk, like, who will me follow it, Elokim, sometimes?
So there what you have in Kapitel Mem Vav, yeah, you have in when it says L'chu Mifale, L'chu Chazu Mifale Sashem, actually, is the one in Kapitel Mem Vav. So you have, Minchas Shai gives a long explanation over there. Our Tilims have Shem Yudke Vavke over there, but the Zohar and various other sources say that it should be Shem Elikim. So the Maisa, most printed Tilims do have Shem Havaya over there, but then they have a different pasuk, a similar pasuk in Kapitel Samach Vav, L'chu Ru Mefalos Elikim. There everybody has Elikim, but yeah.
Some Tilim, they say it twice, one with
one with Hashem and one Elikim. Interesting. Okay. But yeah, I mean, you have, you know, things like that where you have differences between the Bali and Masurda. You have in many places. You have an entire Pirush on all 24 books of Tanakh called Minchas Shai that goes very systematically through these things and discusses them. But yeah. Anyway, the point is, again, that all of these little differences over here, you would think on the face of it that these are just, take for example, the ones, the doubled words, the Yidrech and the Chamesh, you would think on the face of it, if it wasn't Tanakh, you would think, you know, a person was copying it out, he mistakenly wrote the word twice, it happens. But now we're being told that, no, this is Halacha L'Moshe Sinai, this is how it has to be. There's some deeper idea behind it, something from Olam Asel Yonim, but that's how it is. Here's another example of a discrepancy as far as how we read Psukim. This one from not only today's Parsha, but actually today's Chumash. Amr of Acha Ba'ada, B'mar Rava, in the West, in Eretz Yisrael, Paskile Lahai Krol Etlas Psuki. They divide up the following Pasuk, which we have as one Pasuk, they divide it into three. Namely, the pasuk Vayema Hashem Moshe, Hina Anochi Boi Lacha Ba'avon, and Hashem says to Moshe, I'm going to come to you in a thick cloud from Matan Torah. And the pasuk continues Ba'avur Yishma Ombedabri Imach, in order that the people will hear when I'm speaking to you, V'gam B'chol Yaminu La'olam, and they'll believe in you forever. Vayagid Moshe as Divra Am Hashem, and Moshe told over what the people said in response to that to Hashem. So now in Eretz Yisrael, they held that this one long pasuk consists of three psukim. Why? Marsha explains, and this Gemara is also in Kiddushin. Marsha explains over there like this. The Bavur Yishma Ha'am is on the face of it, it's not necessarily a reason. Bavur means because of. But what does that mean? Hashem is saying, I'm going to come to you in a cloud because so that people should hear. What does one have to do with the other? So in Eretz Yisrael, they understood the Bavur to be a preface to the second half of the Pasuk, V'gam B'chol Yaminu La'olam. As a result of Bavur, because they're going to hear me speaking to you, therefore they're going to believe in you forever. which the Rambam writes that in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, that why do we believe in Moshe? Not because of the Osis and Mofsim that he did, but because by Mount Torah, everybody was there and everybody heard the Eibishter speaking to Moshe. Moshe, tell them such and such. And therefore now they knew that Moshe is the highest Navi of all time. So therefore, so in Eretz Yisrael, they held that part, Ba'avur Yishma'am, B'dabri Imach, B'gam B'cho Yamin Olam, has to be a posik of its own. And as far as Vayagad Moshe, as Divra Amal Hashem, Marsha says, they figured that you never, in all the previous psukim, you don't have what Hashem says and what the people reply in one posik. Each time you have what Hashem says in one posik, and then in the next posik, Vayagad Moshe, as Divra Amal Hashem. So here also it should be that way. So therefore, they split it up into three psukim. By the way, I mean, you know, here in this week's parasha, you also have the fact that we have Tam Elyon and Tam Tachton is also a difference like that. There were different mesodas about how to divide up the psukim of Aseres Hadibros, whether to divide them like we have in the printed Chumashim, which is called Tam Tachton, or whether we have the way we read it in Shul Tam Elyon, where every dibra is a posik of its own. So you have such discrepancies here and there. The Gemara mentions in Kedushin that for that reason, not only do we not know. Not only do we not know precisely how many letters there are in Torah, we always say, everybody always says there's a number, but in truth there are slightly different mesodas about it, but even and not only as far as the words, because there are also different opinions about some words, whether they're divided in two or not, but even the number of psukim, it's hard to say that we know accurately because of these kinds of discrepancies. Okay. Continuing on the topic of Moshe teaching the Jewish people, so we got into this by way of, the Gemara had mentioned, That we learned yesterday that you're not allowed to charge for teaching mikra only for teaching halach medrash and halachas and agadah. So we said the idea is Torah Shebichsav has to be taught for free, and we learned that from the pasuk that Moshe says to the Jewish people, Vo'isitziva Hashem ba'isahi, that Hashem commanded me to teach you, and re'eli mabti eschem, and behold, I've taught you, and mani b'chinam afatem b'chinam. So now, continuing on that topic, how did Moshe become rich? Was from the leftovers of the luchas. Because when he comes to Shanem, as Hashem tells him, carve out for yourself, which means psultan, the leftovers, the chips that you carve off, because you have to make square luchas, is going to belong to you. So it was sapphire, Rashi mentions on the pasuk that Hashem there was a sapphire mine under Moshe's tent, and he digs out a block of sapphire over there and carves out the second luchas from it, and now he kept the psoilus. So what's the point? How is that relevant over here? So Marsha explains the point of it is that the point is you would think otherwise. The Gemara is going to establish later on that a Navi has to be rich. So you're going to think, how did Moshe become rich? Must be to charge people for teaching them Torah. But we learned before that Moshe didn't charge them for teaching Torah. Therefore, the Gemara has to explain that he became rich from psoilus and shaluchas. So then Iyun Yaakov makes another point as well. You would have thought maybe that Moshe took some of the spoils from Mitzrayim, but we know he wasn't. While everybody else was busy borrowing, quote unquote, borrowing gold and silver and clothing from the Mitzrayim, Moshe was busy looking for Yosef's coffin. So therefore, so now the Eibishter made it up for him that now he became rich from Sultan Shaluchas. There's a lot of interesting vertlach and explanations about the deeper meaning of this psot and shaluchas. There's Maimor Chassidus where it talks about that it means that unlike the luchas rishonis, which are milamayla lamata, the second ones are milamata lamayla, and therefore the psot and shaluchas represents the greater giluyim of elikus that are brought down as a result of the second luchas, that Moshe achieved those. There's a vort brought, I think, from the Ruzhiner that psol lecha is the opposite of lois sasa lecha pesel. So a person makes himself a pesel, he makes himself a balgaiva, then that's a problem. Here it's the other way around. Psol lecha, and Moshe got great ruchniistic wealth from that. B'chlal, when the Gemara talks about that a Navi is supposed to be rich and strong and whatever, the Rambam actually understands that all of those mean in Ruchnius. It has to be rich in Ruchnius and strong in Ruchnius and so forth. So according to that, then the Psalt and Shaluchas wouldn't mean that Moshe became rich as in now he has a lot of money, but rich as in the Ruchnius that he gained from Psalt and Shaluchas.
Second, Luchas were as opposed to Bali Shuvah.
Yeah, the first ones are they were the level of tzaddikim, and the second one Balei Tshuva. The first ones came only with Torah Shebichsav. The second ones came with the whole Torah Shebaal Peh and halachas and agadis and all that. Yeah. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yosi b'Chanina b'tchilu l'nit n'Torah elal Moshe u'l'Zarei. The Torah was originally given only to Moshe and his descendants. Shenema k'sav l'cha p'sal l'cha. Hashem tells him, write for yourself and carve for yourself. In other words, it's meant to belong to you. So mak sultan shalcha yehe, just like the waste of the luchas is going to be yours, as we just said, from the word psalacha. Mashal points out, in other words, usually the word lacha doesn't always have to mean that it belongs to you. But here you can't say to begin with that how is Moshe supposed to get a block of sapphire that it should be shalcha? So therefore we have to understand that it means psalton yehe shalcha, and then when it says ksav lacha shortly afterwards, then we understand that it also means it's really his. So we'll talk about that in a second, yeah. Moshe nag b'tovas ayin v'nosna l'Yisrael. Moshe was generous with the Torah, and he gave it freely to the Jewish people.
We're talking about the first luchos or the second?
Whether the context we think sav l'cha and psal l'cha is talking about the second luchos. So what does this mean? Like you're right. There are many psukim that say Dabra b'nei Yisrael and so forth. One of the many explanations about it is that if it weren't for Moshe being toiv ayin, yes, of course everybody has to keep the mitzvahs, but we wouldn't have the ability to learn Torah. We would just keep it because that's how it is. Everything would be chukim to us. The fact that we have the ability to learn and to understand Torah is that Moshe was toiv ayin and he gave us that capability. But the Gemara itself is actually going to point out soon. There's a particular detail within Torah that we're talking about. We're not talking about the entire understanding of Torah. We're talking about something within. Toiv Ayin, by the way, the Rosh points out Moshe is ki toiv hu. So therefore he's referred to by this pasuk toiv ayin, and the pasuk says ki nosan milachem toiv ayin hu yivorach. The pasuk says on him toiv ayin hu yivorach, the one with a good eye is blessed. Ki nosan milachem ladol, because he gave of his bread to the poor. So the Rosh explains the toiv ayin is Moshe, v'atero is a ki toivu. Lachmo means the Torah. We know the Torah is compared to bread, and dal refers to the Jewish people where at that time they were very poor of mitzvahs. So Moshe was very generous and gave that ability to be able to learn Torah to the Jewish people. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rav Chista. So Rav Chista says, what do you mean? The Hashem, Moshe describes, V'oisi tziva Hashem ba'oisehi, l'lamed eschem chukim u'mishpatim. Hashem commanded me at that time to teach you the chukim and the mishpatim. So that means Hashem told him to teach it to the Jewish people. So the answer is okay. You could say that it means Oisit Siva Vani Lachem. Hashem commanded me all these details, and I went ahead and gave it to you. So I decided on my own. The Lamed Eschem Chukim Mishpatim doesn't mean that Hashem commanded me directly to do that. What about Re'eli Mati Eschem Chukim Mishpatim Kashet Sivani Hashem Alekoi? The other pasuk that we quoted before that I've taught you the Chukim and Mishpatim as Hashem commanded me. And again, the answer is Oisit Siva Vani Lachem. Hashem commanded them to me personally, and I on my own gave them to you. Okay, what about Va'ata Kisvu Lachem Es Hashira Azois in Parshas Vayelech? Now write for yourselves this shira, and on the face of it, the shira means the now you can't write that you can't. The Rambam points out, how do we know from that pasuk is where we learn the mitzvah to write a sefer Torah? Why is that? Because you can't write sections of Torah by themselves. So if the Torah is telling you to write the shira, then it has to mean the whole Torah of which the shira is a part. Well, the Gemara says no, Hashira l'chuda. No, it means that Hashem was telling Moshe that the Jewish people have a mitzvah of writing for themselves only the shira. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, what do you mean? L'mantiyali ashira l'azois l'eid b'vnei Yisrael. The pasuk is saying, in order that the shira will be a witness for me on b'nei Yisrael. If it's only the shira, how is that a witness? Marshall says, so what's the problem? The shira of Hazinu we're talking about, that encapsulates all of Jewish history. Yes, it's very much a witness and a warning of what's going to be and of what's going to be the whole future Jewish history. Marshall says, the point is, that we see at least that if Hashem is telling them they have to write the Shira, and the Shira is not the fundamental part of Torah after all, so therefore all the more so then they should be v'lamdos b'nei Yisrael. Hashem tells them teach it to b'nei Yisrael, so that must mean Hashem is telling them not just the Shira, but the more, so to speak, essential parts of Torah that have the actual mitzvahs. So the answer is you're right. The Gemara says, Ela Pilpula Ba'alma. What it means is what was given specifically to Moshe, and Moshe of his own volition gave it to the Jewish people, is the ability of pilpul, the ability to analyze the Torah in depth, even when it's not Negei Halacha, for example. That ability was originally given only to Moshe and his descendants. And he, the idea, for example, that's all of the seichel that's hinted at in the Torah and so forth. So Moshe generously gave it to the whole Jewish people instead of just keeping that for himself. Okay, so that would have meant we'd do a raisa. We would be learning it on some superficial level, but not Pilpul of Alma. So that was something that was given uniquely to Moshe. Iyun Yaakov makes a point over here as well that with the first luchos there was never going to be any forgetting of Torah. So therefore, Pilpul was not really necessary. The whole point of Pilpul is to reconstruct details of Torah that have otherwise been forgotten or are unclear. If there's no forgetting, you don't need Pilpul, but you don't need Pilpul. Now, when it comes to the second luchos, anyway, there's the capability, the possibility of forgetting Torah. So Hashem gave that ability to overcome that to Moshe, and Moshe in turn shared it with the entire Jewish people. Yeah. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula, Chamisha Asa B'Shvat. So the Pasuk mentions the Shiva Saminim. Bnei Yisrael are compared to earth in which there are lots of precious stones and pearls hidden. But like Moshe digging out the sapphire, we have to dig them. We have to keep on digging them because you only find them in certain places. And you find them very deep. So therefore, so you have to put in tremendous effort, and your gaiti amatsasi is all the greater, and that makes a greater ilui in that. Just like you have, for example, you plow only a couple of inches deep in order to plant produce, but you dig much deeper in order to find precious stones and things like that. So the Rebbe was talking about on Chamisha Asa B'Shvat Tavshin Nun Beis, the last sicha of that date, that we should be using this time of Rosh Hashanah Leilanos to continue to strengthen these avoidas that are represented by the various ones of the Shiva Saminim for ourselves and as far as dealing with others, and Achlatas Tovus with all of that will bring very quickly the schar that Ben Arinu Rizkenu Nelech will run with the clouds with an Anei Shmaya to that land of Eretz Yisrael, to the entire the Shlemus of Eretz Yisrael, beyond even the land of the 10 nations, where we have taka those Shiva Saminim, and we say the bracha on it, lechem v'piri v'lis b'yam v'tuva and ala oretz v'al peresecha, and that it'll also be a land full of all those precious stones and jewels and all of that, and Yerushalayim and Ira Kodesh, Hara Kodesh, the Beis Mikdash and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where there we have the ultimate stone, the Evan Shesia. Continuing on halachas of cholim. If a person has an ache in his eye, if he has an ache or an infection in both of his eyes, or if he has that one of them is that one of them is tearing very strongly because of pain, or there was mucus or blood or whatever coming out of it, so those kinds of things, you're mechal Shabbos for. The Gemara points out that a person's sight is directly connected to their heart, and therefore that would be something that endangers their life. However, the Alter Rebbe points out when it's already on its way to being healed, then you can only do things that are derabanan for it. So in practice, if a person has that kind of eye infection, it would mean in the early stages they take whatever is necessary for it. But afterwards, for example, the most you can do maybe is take eye drops.